I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Ask OTC, the show where we answer all of your questions from the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
Straight away, this one from Michael. You're going to like this, Nikki. Did Arsenal... well, you know what's coming. Did Arsenal underestimate Porto?
Thanks, Dotun.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. I don't know if Arsenal underestimated Porto. I think the English media certainly underestimated Porto. Whether or not Arsenal were undone by underestimating them, or simply just not being creative enough, is a more involved question. I think there certainly has been a complacency in the atmosphere that Arsenal are doing well in the Premier League, and I think there's this inevitable Premier League confidence born from being richer than everyone else.
Well, as they were coming out yesterday, didn't Darren Fletcher say on TNT Sport, one of the absolute favourites for the Champions League? And I thought, like potentially, they could challenge for it. Yeah. But it does feel a bit cart before horse.
Yeah, for a team that has had an infamously bad relationship with the Champions League last 16, even before the recent hiatus from being in the last 16.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think there is still, people misunderstand how European football works. And yes, of course, having the richest squad with the most money put into it is going to give you the best chances of winning. But I think European football plays differently to domestic football for everyone. And that adjustment isn't always straightforward. And I think Porto, who are routinely in the knockout stages of this competition, are routinely a very streetwise team. It was a streetwise performance. There was a lot of gamesmanship and killing the game, but Porto played the game they needed to and created the only two real chances of the game. So they deserve to get their win.
I think what struck me is, if we're talking about Arsenal underestimating Porto, going back to Michael's question, normally, I would just totally agree with Nikki and say, yeah, I think it's more a media thing. But the one thing that makes me think that Arsenal underestimated them a bit, or Mikel Arteta underestimated them a little bit, I don't feel like he did his homework on them at all. And for someone who's as meticulous, as well prepared, as cerebral on every level as Arteta, Porto played exactly the way you would expect them to play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's in Portugal at the moment, they're saying, how can it be that you go to Arouca and lose last week, and Pepe's there being like apologising in front of the cameras for how bad they were, and then go and beat Arsenal a week later, or less than a week later. And like I think, you know, maybe they weren't quite as bad in that game and they weren't quite as good in this game. But you always know what you're going to get with Porto and Conceição's team in a Champions League context. I got a text from the great Marcus Speller in the closing stages of that game last night before Galeno had actually scored the goal. And he said, Porto always this physical? And I said, well, yeah, that they are. It's one of the things that it's almost a sea change in Portuguese football, because not saying that Sporting and Benfica have looked to Conceição and the way that he's done things at Porto, But from a physical standpoint, yes, they definitely have. Mm. Because physically, they were never able, Portuguese teams, to match up with Premier League teams. But now they're a bit more athletic. And what they did in terms of swarming them, that is exactly Porto's thing. And I thought they did that really well. But if you're Arteta, I think you have to have a plan for that. You can't go into that game. They play exactly how you expect them to play and you don't end up creating anything. I think that's quite poor.
I'd add one more layer to the complacency, which is one that I'm going to say purely is me repeating the knowledge of someone smarter, but I was doing the Stan Sport coverage of Champions League games last night with Mark Bosnich on, and Mark Bosnich obviously has been a top level keeper, and he was absolutely scathing of David Reyes' positioning on that Galeno goal. And perhaps that is a little bit of complacency as well in your sort of end of game moment where you think, well, I don't have to worry about where I'm standing. And Mark Bosnich really thought that even though it's a brilliant goal from Galeno, he felt like the keeper gave it to him. Something.
And really, the fact that they ended up with that shot anyway, it's just such a not really paying attention pass out by Martinelli, isn't it?
Yeah.
Arguably, the goal wasn't the story of the game. I know football's a results game, but actually, the story for me is that Arsenal didn't get a single shot on target, Nicky. I think Andy's got a point there. As physical as Porto are, there is no excuse for Arsenal not being able to place at least one shot that makes their goalkeeper, Porto's goalkeeper, work.
Yeah, I do think you have to give credit where it's due to the defending. Porto were keeping men behind the ball and not letting Arsenal get in behind at all. There was felt like a never-ending sequence of set pieces that Arsenal had, and again, Porto managed those very well. But of course, you can't win a game without putting the ball on target. And as we perhaps saw in the other game of the night with Napoli and Barcelona, in what I felt was perhaps a very imperfect performance from both of those teams, having a centre forward who will take that one chance for you is a big difference. And perhaps that's a different question of what is still missing from Arsenal's squad.
Still going to win the second leg comfortably, I think.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Ahmad, who says, is there a chance that PSV can go on a run in the Champions League?
Yes.
Andy?
Yes, I think so. And despite the fact they didn't win the first leg at home to Dortmund, I think there's enough in that to say that, you know, that this is a team that has improved a lot under Peter Bosch. It's something that I didn't see coming, as we've discussed before. But I think especially when going back to Arsenal, I went to the game right at the start of this Champions League campaign where Arsenal absolutely flamed PSV. And it was extraordinary, really, because there was this incredible atmosphere around the Emirates, as there often is for a night match, which people don't always credit. And it was like, yes, we're back in the Champions League. And then they're 3-0 up in 20 minutes. And the edge comes off the atmosphere. It's almost like, well, it's quite disappointing that it's this easy, isn't it? And so for PSV to go on from that and get into the second stage, and yeah, of course, I think you can say that Lens were a bit green and Sevilla have their issues this season if we're looking at the group, but they've still done a very good job to do that. They were really interesting, I thought, in the return against Arsenal as well. And I look at this and I think Dortmund, talking of underestimating, the way that, as we saw it said in the main show, Mats Hummels came out and said, well, I look at them and they're really beatable. It's like, right, okay. Because to me, it feels like PSV were the better side by quite a distance. And I know Dortmund took the lead. I know Dortmund have had their complaints about the penalty, which I'm not sure about. I think it is a penalty in the modern era, to be perfectly honest. But they definitely deserved it. And, you know, they with a bit more clarity in terms of finishing, I think they could have won that game quite comfortably. I think especially with the way goals not counting, I think they can go to Signal Iduna Park and do something. Because with Dortmund, there's such a lack of pattern to the way they play. With PSV, okay, there are limits, but there's identity. I'm not really sure there is that with Dortmund. I think there's talent, but I'm not convinced there's a collective identity.
I think there's just some vulnerability to that Dortmund team as well. And perhaps some of that is born out of complacency, but at home in the league, they've conceded 15 goals this season in 11 games. And in the Champions League, they only won one of their home group games. So the sort of idea that, oh, well, we'll go back home and we'll be invulnerable, that doesn't fit with the reality of their season.
Does this not go back to what you were saying earlier on, Nikki, that maybe it's the media that underestimates the teams that are doing quite well? Because in,
I think people have an idea of PSV's pecking order in the Champions League, placing the pecking order in the Champions League despite being former champions. They're almost one of those clubs from the European Cup era that's been left behind by the financial development
You're
of the European
absolutely
game.
Right. But they are the informed team in the Champions League. They haven't lost a game all season. And you would have thought that that would make them strong contenders for this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're talking about them in a domestic context rather than a European context.
Yeah, but nevertheless.
But you're right. They've been brilliant. And they've been brilliant having lost, as we said a couple of weeks ago, the best player in the Netherlands in Xavi Simons.
Apologies.
It's really impressive.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen Peter Bosz. It's really unusual to be surprised by a coach who's in his 50s. And I've been really surprised by him. By staying with his principles, he's actually produced it. Maybe it's down to the players. Maybe it's down to this special group of players that he's got. But they feel very efficient, very smart, and very able to in-game work out problems.
And they've got goals in the team, I think, is a critical thing, right? Because you're going to go to Dortmund, and I know away goals aren't a thing anymore, but still, more than likely, you're going to have to score
to win the game. Yeah.
And Luke de Jong scoring by the hat for the season, but you've also got Erving Lozano, who, as I said to somewhere else the other day, I was sort of shocked to realise he's still only 28 years old. but Goose Till, Sabari, I mean, all the way down the team, I think they've had, like, I'm looking now, it's 15, 16 different goal scorers this season.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
These are all interesting questions on Ask OTC, because it can, look, this from Callum: can Bologna qualify for the Champions League, and how big an achievement would it be if they did, Nikki?
Of course they can, because we're into the final third of the season now, aren't we? And they're level on points with Atalanta, who are fourth. Atalanta have a game in hand, but that game in hand is away to Inter. In fact, Atalanta's next two games are away to Milan and Inter, so they're going to have some tests on their plate. Bologna are really flying at the moment, and have had some really big wins in the last couple of weeks, or even in the last week, beating Fiorentina and then Lazio back to back away from home against Lazio as well. Which
impressive, really impressive.
And up till now, that's kind of been the one black mark on Bologna's season, is they really haven't won away from home. They've drawn quite a lot away from home, but they haven't won games away from home. So to go to Lazio, who were coming off their own big win over Bayern Munich in the Champions League, and get that result was really something. They are without question, a team that is more than the sum of its parts right now. Thiago Motta is absolutely building a reputation in Italy as a seriously, seriously good manager. But they have got some individuals there who are doing brilliantly. Lewis Ferguson, we've talked about before on this show, and is having a wonderful season there. Joshua Zirkzee, who both sort of created and finished the winning goal against Lazio. They just have they have a very clear identity, and they have a very selfless group of players, I would say, including Zirkzee, who I think that's the thing that stands out most about him, even though I think his talent is significant and he stands out because he's tall but very mobile, and these things you don't always see in combination. But I think that the selflessness of the team, the fluidity of the team, that I don't know if I can say they're the best coach team in Italy right now, because Simone Inzaghi is doing such good things at Inter, but that they're right up there. Thiago Motta really has impressed a lot of people.
I have a question for you off the back of that, actually. Going back to what Dotton was saying in the main OTC yesterday about the idea of this chain of coaches, the waiting for the first domino to fall. I mean, surely Thiago Motta is one that you talked about, is the reputation he has in Italy. I mean, there should be clubs everywhere that are interested in him. I mean, he always, this is a bit of a fatuous thing to say, but there was always this sense when he was a player that he was this sort of, the way he thought around the game, especially after injuries diminished his physical state, and he still went on to have a great career afterwards, by the way, you know, part of PSG's, I would say, best ever midfield. He always looked as if he would be a really good coach, but he has proved that very, very quickly. Bear in mind, he could have gone last summer. PSG were really interested in the idea of bringing him back as head coach. Now, I think we can say,
so were Napoli, by the way, and as I've been saying this week, perhaps he was the smartest man in the room, looking around and going, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah.
Not right now. Yeah.
Well, I guess the question would be, if he goes from Bologna at the end of the season, where would it be? Because I can definitely see him being PSG coach at some point. But unless something huge happens, I'm pretty sure Luis Enrique is still going to be there next season. So that slot is not really open at the moment. Where's an obvious spot? Because again, I would say maybe you look at Inter, but that's locked down. You look at Atletico Madrid, and that's locked down because Simeone had this huge renaissance in the calendar year of 2023. And whereas at some point they would have been looking at a way to replace him, that's not the case anymore. So,
yeah, I think there's some interesting dominoes to fall domestically in Italy, and that will perhaps define what could happen within the big clubs within Italy, which is still the most obvious place for him to go next, just because you have an audience there that's been paying attention. I don't get the impression, for instance, that there are necessarily English clubs that would be looking at him and ready to take their gamble on him yet. Even someone like Bayern Munich, would they be ready to gamble on a manager who's got relatively little experience, I suppose, compared to what they're used to hiring? Whereas, for instance, I mean, Napoli for sure would try again, but the fact he turned them down last summer makes me think he would turn them down again.
What about a Roma?
I think a Roma is possible, although Daniele De Rossi is doing so well, the question of whether that job's going to come up is hanging in the air. But I think there's a couple of really big ones that might, even though Milan have really turned things around and been playing much better, there is this enduring sense that perhaps Stefano Pioli's chapter there is going to come to an end this summer. And perhaps even he might consider a move somewhere like Napoli, even though that might seem like a step backwards, just because he's tired of being made out as a scapegoat, purely as he often is by Milan supporters for some reason, despite really, when you take a step back, not bad results at all. So if Pioli was to step aside at Milan, could I see a Milan going for Motta? Yes. If Juventus were to get brave and say, actually, do we really want to commit to another year of Allegri ball, or do we want to aspire to try to play something more modern and different, then I could see Juventus being a destination. But all of those are very speculative for now. And I think that is definitely where his market is going to be strongest, because everyone in Serie A has seen what he's done. But at the same time as that, because he is also an international figure, and because of that experience in Paris, maybe there are opportunities further afield. Maybe Bayer Leverkusen, if Xabi Alonso leaves, could be an interesting fit for wanting to bring in another progressive manager who's going somewhere. I don't know.
They're going to be so let down when he turns up for training on the first day and go, yeah, Xavi used to pass the ball better than that in training.
This from Paul. Why exactly have the fans in Germany been protesting about the media rights deal?
Well, these protests have been going on for a number of weeks. What happened is there was a DFL, that's German Football League, member vote. All the clubs had a vote as to whether they wanted to pursue the idea of outside investment. Now, of course, the scope for outside investment is limited in the Bundesliga because of the 50+1 rule, where theoretically, in the grand majority of clubs, there are a few exceptions like Wolfsburg and Bayer Leverkusen and, to an extent, Leipzig. But the members should hold the biggest part of the club. So that is something that lends the fans a great deal of power, and the fans are happy to have that. They feel that is a central tenet of German football. Now, this DFL vote, which was passed very narrowly, said that the DFL would commit to pursuing outside investment in what they would set up as a separate company to look after audiovisual rights, so media rights, so television, etc., going forward, and what they would do, similarly to what has happened in Spain and France already, is to sell a segment of those rights to an outside investor, so a private equity fund like CVC or Blackstone were two of the major candidates, for example. So for 20 years, they would have 8% of those rights for, say, €1 billion. Now, for the DFL, that's a way of getting an investment that they can't really do with selling off parts of the clubs, that the clubs can't do with selling off parts of the clubs, because it just can't really happen in Germany, which is one of the reasons why the Super League plan never had any traction there, because it wouldn't get past the fans. And the thing is, the way that the fans have reacted to this, they see that as the thin end of the wedge. So what if you don't get the yield? What if the private equity investors don't get the yield that they hoped for? Would they instead be looking to exert influence in different ways? Now, the DFL have always tried to calm it down and say, no, it's not like that. It will be safeguarded. But German football fans are, for the better, quite hawkish about this sort of thing. Now, we've had chocolates being thrown on the pitch, tennis balls, last weekend, remote control cars, well, which it turns out are very, very difficult to kick off the pitch. And it felt like the last couple of weeks has felt like a bit of a breaking point, because you've had players who, on the whole, have sympathised with the fans, because firstly, you can't come out and speak out against the fans in any culture. That's ridiculous. But secondly, I think people understand the culture. So you had Christopher Trimmel of Union Berlin. He was suspended, and he's captain. He came out and talked about it when one of the stoppages was going on in Sky. This was the same weekend that his Union Berlin team scored the winner in the 25th minute of first half stoppage time, because there was such an incredible delay. Now, they made the most of it, Sky, and they interviewed him because he was banned while he was there. And he said, well, protest is meant to hurt. That's what is meant to inconvenience. That's what is meant to happen. So even if it's a pain in the ass for the players, we just have to suck it up. Whereas last weekend, a couple of players, notably in when there were delays in either half in quite a few of the games, and when Dortmund played at Wolfsburg, you had Emre Can and Niklas Füllkrug come out and say, we can't put up with this anymore. We can't play in this. And this week, in what was just a huge victory for German football fans, the DFL said, right, okay, we've scrapped all of this. We're not going to do it anymore. And I think at least part of that is because the private equity investors must be thinking, this is nothing like it was. It was easy for us in Spain, France, yeah, and France, where there was no protest. France, they desperately need the money. Spain, there's not that culture of protest for fans' rights in the same way. And it just goes to show what a peculiar and individual case the Bundesliga is, really.
It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. This question from Tom: what credentials made Marseille think Jean-Louis Gasset would be a good fit to replace Gennaro Gattuso?
Well, First, before we pursue that, Nikki, what's the feeling about the end of Reno's latest adventure in Italy?
What credentials made them think Rino Gattuso was the right man?
That's another question.
Maybe credentials just aren't being used. I think there's... Gattuso is one of these figures, and actually this might be part of the answer of why they wanted him in the first place. He's one of these figures who, within Italian football, and this might seem shocking to fans who in England who remember the clash with Joe Jordan, but he has a tremendous amount of goodwill within Italian football. I think even in his managerial stops, where nothing has gone quite as well as it was hoped, obviously with Pisa and then Milan and Napoli, one of the things that came out routinely was how well liked he was among his players. I think he's always managed to sustain that. And so, of course, the news of another job not going well for him in Italy, that's people who know him and are familiar with him are rooting for him and are disappointed that it didn't go well. But I don't think there's any shock either. He's not someone who has really, in any of those stops, made a great impression as a manager.
But, you know, we always say when we're talking about coaches, such a part of your coaching success, your coaching career's success, is picking the right jobs. Mm. He seems to willfully pick really difficult ones. I mean, it was almost impossible to succeed in this, right?
Yeah, I mean,
because of Marseille, because of their record with coaches,
and because they're a mess at the moment. And I think that's the interesting thing. I think a lot of people will look at this, and I guess reading between the lines, that's the kind of hint in Tom's question. Why would they think that Gasse, the 70-year-old guy,
I knew it was Gasse,
who just got
I've blown a gasket,
who just got fired by the Ivory Coast, or did he jump or was he pushed? A bit of both. At the end of the group stage in the African Cup of Nations. And of course, they go on to win the tournament, where they lose 4-0 to Equatorial Guinea and he goes. I think it's easy to look at it and say, why would Marseille do this? You know, we talked about getting rid of a coach at this point in the season rather than limping through with a lame duck, going back to what we were saying about Thomas Tuchel and Xavi yesterday. Now, I don't think there is the possibility of continuing with a lame duck coach at Marseille because it is such a combustible environment. But on the other hand, a lot of people would say Gasse's appointment shows you that there's just no one out there who's willing to take on something so prickly at this point in the season. Having said that, the response to a lot of Marseille fans, of a lot of Marseille fans to this are, we can see the sense in it. It's a safe pair of hands. Now, obviously, some other Marseille fans have said, okay, we've had everything already this season and now they've appointed Joe Biden. But...
That is cruel.
I think you look at Gasse and there's things not to recommend him. So the recent history, what happened at the Ivory Coast.
Remember that, given that he's Joe Biden?
Well, yeah. The fact that he's been mainly an assistant coach at perceived domestic rivals like PSG, which is a definite no-no, Saint-Étienne, Bordeaux, etc. But I think you look at the fact that they've gone for the glamour appointment so many times in the past. So whether that's Sampaoli, or whether that's Bielsa, or whether that's to an extent Gattuso, you know, slightly exotic, a name rather than necessarily someone. It felt to me like Gattuso was on the market. He was a name of substance, so let's give him the job. It never seemed to fit. It never seemed to make sense. It wasn't set up for him to succeed, and he wasn't the right coach for them to succeed either. Whereas Gasse knows French football brilliantly. Those who are familiar with the oeuvre of Laurent Blanc will know that a lot of Laurent Blanc's success, particularly at PSG, was when Gasse was doing the tactics for him. He's got a very, very sharp tactical brain. And when you look at Laurent Blanc's efforts without Gasse, well, look, the less said about them, the better. He's never been quite the same without him. So look, they're in an awful hole at the moment. But someone who can get simple tactical ideas across, and he has some good players there, I don't think it's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. Obviously, the optics of it are awful. But the optics of everything that's happened at Marseille this season were awful. So I think a lot of people in there are willing to give him a chance. And if the fans are willing to give him a chance, well, We give the board 5 minutes peace at least, won't it?
You see, I didn't think it was a brilliant question, but it elicits such a fantastic answer that encompasses so much. I say bring on more questions like this. So thank you very much, Tom. And thank you for listening to Ask OTC. And if you'd like to ask a question that you can that we can answer, you can contact us at any time at Radio Dotton, at Andy Brassel, at Nikki Bandini, or at OTC Pod. And you can email us, otc@footballramble.com.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.